my name is Neil Davis. I'm acting as the regional director for fisheries management with DFO, and I'm in Vancouver.
Great. Neil, thanks so much for being with us today. Of course, the closures, major closures of 60% of the commercial fishing that takes place here in BC was a bit of a shock for a lot of people. But maybe give us a roundabout and a breakdown, a brief on what is taking place, what the announcement was, and also what went into the decision to shut down a large portion of the commercial fishing industry here on the North and Central Coast.
Sure. So, I mean, all of this is really driven by what we're seeing in terms of the health of stocks up and down the coast. And, you know, as much as the particulars of the closures this year may be different and go beyond what we have done in recent years, this is part of a longer term challenge and trend that we have been seeing in terms of the health of stocks. And the situation is getting pretty dire. For example, there's around 50 individual salmon populations that are currently under consideration to be listed under the Species at Risk Act. And so that's just an illustration of how widespread some of the declines in stocks have been and that have been unfolding now for two or three decades in many instances. And so that is what has led both the individual decision to implement these closures in the commercial fishery, but also led our minister to announce the Pacific Salmon Strategy Initiative in early June, where you know, there was a very large commitment made, including $647 million over 5 years, to really try to stem the declines in Pacific salmon populations and start to rebuild those populations over the longer term. So that announcement and that kind of renewed commitment to rebuilding really led the department to reevaluate what some of the initial steps should be to support that initiative and take a more precautionary and a longer term approach to managing salmon. So important to note that this is really just one decision in what is going to be a much broader strategy that will be needed to support the rebuilding of those populations over time. We know this is not an issue just related to fishing pressure or just related to commercial fishing pressure. It's going to need to consider other threats to salmon that arise due to climate change, habitat degradation, the presence of contaminants in the environment, and so on. And so while this was one difficult decision we had to make, we know that over the months and years ahead, we're going to be doing much more to support that rebuilding.
Now, Neil, you mentioned that closures like this are not new. Maybe this, you know, the level of the amount of these closures is new. 60% reduction is quite large, but we've seen commercial reductions and closures before trying to do the same thing, trying to limit the amount of fish that are taken out just because we aren't seeing the returns like we used to. It's pretty clear, as you mentioned, that a number of these populations, especially here where we are in the Skeena region, are dwindling. And these last few years have really, you know, kind of focused in on that issue that we're just not seeing the volume of fish coming back to these systems. Now, I guess maybe you can explain some more of this new strategy and what are some of the other key points, key measures that are going to go into it, noting that, as you mentioned, climate change has a big impact. We're seeing warmer waters. And do you think that closures like this are enough to see those numbers, to see the salmon stocks rebound in the next few years?
Yeah, well, those are really good questions, Dan. So maybe I'll just touch on a few things. And so when the minister made this announcement in early June, she set out what we're calling the four kind of main pillars of what we think a strategy needs to include. So the first one is conservation and stewardship. So this is, you know, really building on the work that we do now in a substantive way to do some of those things I talked about earlier. Protect and restore habitat for salmon. Ensure that water use in rivers and streams is going to support a healthy salmon population. The second pillar is enhanced hatchery production. So how do we use existing hatchery facilities and the potential for additional hatchery capacity to augment and support the abundance of salmon populations in a way that is attentive to supporting wild stocks as well. The third pillar is harvest transformation, and that's where this particular decision around commercial fisheries restrictions comes into play, but it's not limited to just commercial fisheries. There is going to need to be a look across how we manage all fisheries as part of the work under that pillar. And then lastly, the fourth pillar, integrated management and collaboration. So, you know, salmon have a very unique life cycle. They go way out to sea, they come back and travel through coastal waters to get to streams and rivers all up and down the coast, some of which cross international boundaries. You know, this is not the kind of challenge that can be solved by one party alone or by one strategy alone. And so hence the focus on really trying to integrate our efforts and collaborate with partners. And those partners are going to need to include other levels of government, the province, First Nations, municipal groups, all of the different user groups, whether they be harvesters or others that have impact on salmon, to really draw on the expertise and the authorities and areas of jurisdiction that all of these groups have to come up with solutions that are going to meet the mark, that are going to all contribute to a healthier salmon populations in the future. We know that there is no silver bullet. There's nothing that suggests one strategy is going to solve this challenge. And so hence the broad approach that's being set out here.
Neil, we've, you know, seen a downturn in salmon populations for quite a while now. You know, around the mid 2000 range, they really started to head in this direction. And we haven't really seen them rebound, especially, you know, since the late 2010s, you know, we started to see that warm water, that blob, the big blob that was coming into the North Pacific, warming that surface temperature waters. I mean, there's a lot of factors that play into this as to why salmon are dwindling in the volume of the stock as well as in their size. But why has it taken this long, seeing that kind of trajectory for a while now? Why has it taken this long to put this into place, put the strategy into place, and also have $647 million attached to it, which is not a little bit of money? That's a lot of money, and I'm curious to know, what is the majority of those funds going towards to try to improve the situation?
Sure, yeah. So I think the first thing to be clear about is this is really sort of extending and building upon a lot of work that's been underway with a whole variety of partners and contributors for many years. And so this isn't sort of the beginning of an effort to support rebuilding and to turn the ship around, so to speak. But it is very much a significant investment to seriously double down on those efforts. And so we're going to as much as possible be drawing on a lot of that good work that's been done and on the partnerships that have been formed over many years with a variety of different groups to take you know, things to the next level, so to speak. And as you mentioned, you know, in some cases these are pretty big. There are large scale dynamics at play. And so, you know, that's going to require us to be innovative and to think differently about what kinds of solutions are really going to build adaptability and resilience in salmon populations in the face of some of those challenges. I think that's what the strategy is really aimed at.
Just a couple other things for you, Neil. Of course, the major loser here is a big portion of the commercial fishing industry, gill nets, harvesters on the coast, all up and down the coast. We saw the history of canneries kind of going by the wayside, and a lot of these commercial fishing fleets really shrink in size, especially here in the North Coast. We've seen that over several decades. But there's statements that have come out from the United Fishermen's and Allied Workers Union saying that this is not the way to go. That this is really kind of taking a chunk out of the commercial salmon industry that plays into a lot of factors and providing fish for communities, economic stimulus, all kinds of ideas. But they really pointed to the fact that they believe in their statements that this is not based in science.
So I think there's a few elements to your question there. I mean, to start back at the beginning, we all want healthier salmon populations and more fish that can support sustainable fisheries and all of the benefits that flow from that. And so this is a tough time for commercial harvesters. And really, we all want to move to a place where the stocks are healthy enough that they can sustain fisheries, whether they be commercial, recreational, or First Nations fisheries for their food and social and ceremonial purposes. So that's the goal, and I think it's a goal that everybody shares. And so that's what we want to try and move things back to. But that needs to be done in a way that is reflective of the state of salmon populations now and how we need to adjust our fisheries management approaches and the fleets to really reflect where we are now. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, the challenges facing commercial fisheries are not unique to this year. These have been challenges that have been unfolding for a number of years. And so this is really an attempt to let's transform. Let's catch up to the state of things now and find a different way forward that's going to provide a way for existing harvesters to exit through the retirement of their licenses and financial compensation for that. And then for those that remain, to redefine what a viable fishery is going to look like in a future that isn't like the past. In terms of the second part of that question, science informs all of the aspects of this, and many harvesters are really steeped in a lot of the of this information and about the status of the stocks, and so. That's really sort of the basis from which all of the subsequent steps flow. And there's lots of data that illustrates, which stocks are in trouble, where, and how widespread are those challenges. Stepping forward from that, the approach that we've taken in defining closures is really about using criteria and applying those criteria consistently across all of the different salmon fisheries so that there's a rationale and a logic and a consistency to how we make decisions for each of those. And those criteria consider things like what stocks are being targeted in a given fishery and what's the health of that stock. Which stocks are intercepted incidentally? Sometimes people use the term bycatch for stocks like that. And what's the health of those stocks? And how able is the fishery to avoid any impact on stocks of concern, whether they be the target or the bycatch stocks? And really using that kind of assessment to arrive at decisions about, okay, if we aren't confident that there are ways to significantly avoid or completely avoid implications of a fishery for stocks of concern, then that has led us to some of those closure decisions. In other instances, we've made decisions that fisheries can proceed, often with some additional restrictions in place, because we think that by applying other mitigation measures, perhaps, you know, when fishers are permitted to fish or where or with what kind of gear, etc., that impacts on any stocks of concern can be avoided or kept to a very bare minimum. But overall, what you're seeing with the decision that's been made this year is the introduction of a more precautionary approach to those decisions. So looking at the declines in stocks, you know, being more precautionary in how we define where there are fishing opportunities that we think are sort of safe to proceed and won't pose any concerns to those or any risks to those stocks of concern.
Neil, where I live on the Bulkley River in Smithers. I know a lot of anglers, as well as, commercial fishers out on the coast there. And obviously we have a different situation here upriver. We often see that, sports fishing, you know, doesn't necessarily happen, especially last couple of years, but also, targeted fisheries, you know, only being able to go after the stocks that are actually, doing well, in a particular year. But on the coast, it's a little bit different in terms of how those, numbers, the escapements are, combined and how they're determined. So for those folks, again, from the commercial fishing industry that may be calling foul or may be upset about the decision to close a lot of those fisheries, they feel in conversations I've had with some of them that their livelihoods are being put at risk here. Some of them have even tried to make the comparison with the cod fishery in the East Coast in the 90s and what happened there. I guess if there are those commercial fishers out there that are wondering, you know, what are they going to do for their livelihoods? You know, who can they talk to? You know, what's the message that that you're trying and DFO is trying to get across to them about this situation, knowing that a lot of these closures, it has been mentioned that will be indefinite until the stocks improve?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a really important point, and I don't think it's something we want to minimize. I think it's important to acknowledge and recognize that these are really hard decisions because they have direct implications for people's livelihoods. And so I think that's the first kind of part of the response is just to recognize that this does mean challenges for people. That is a big part of the reason that DFO has accompanied this announcement about closures with an announcement about a license retirement program. And so this is an opportunity that provides license holders the chance to retire their license, exit the fishery, and be financially compensated for that license to give them, you know, some reimbursement for their investment in the fishery and a way to leave the fishery with some dignity and some financial compensation for that. And so, you know, that's, I think, a really important part of the approach here. And we expect to be working with harvesters in the fall to really define the specifics about that license retirement program so that we can start retiring those licenses and providing that exit for folks out of the fishery in 2022.
I guess just to follow up with that, you know, obviously, you know, commercial fishing has a deep, deep history in the North and Central Coast, especially. Do you think that's enough for people who may be, you know, multi-generational commercial fishers on the coast? Do you think that's enough for them to say, well, we'll buy your license and retire your license, which essentially is retiring, you know, the livelihoods that they've had for, you know, so many years?
Yeah, and that's a good question too. And I would say that, you know, what we have observed increasingly over the years is a few things happening. The first is that as opportunities to commercially fish for salmon have declined over really a number of decades now, there are more and more of these license holders that have chosen not to fish in a given year because it doesn't make financial sense for them or what have you. And so, Yeah, there's a pretty good chunk of the license holders that in any given year are inactive. And so this is sort of finally an opportunity for them to shift from being inactive and sort of renewing their license year after year to finding a way out. The other thing that's been happening over the years and is common among a lot of commercial harvesters is that salmon is one part of their participation in the commercial fishery, and they either hold licenses or quota in other fisheries as well. And so while this particular decision to really further constrain fishing opportunity for salmon is going to change what that looks like for them, in some cases it may not mean their exit from the entirety of the commercial fishery. And I think the other point is just that while it is a difficult time, the view of DFO is that these were decisions that had to be made. If we want a future where there are still fishing opportunities and we're rebuilding salmon to a point where, you know, perhaps those opportunities are more than what they are today, some of these tough decisions need to be made now to give us a chance to arrive at that future.
Yeah, no doubt. Neil, just the last one for you, and it's one that in a lot of the work I've done around reporting on salmon issues, the salmon crisis as it is what is your hope for the future of salmon, Pacific salmon, coastwide here in BC? Obviously, there are numerous pressures, not just fishing and harvesting, but climate change and other environmental pressures. So all of that lined up, and a lot of what we've talked about today, where do you find hope in the long-term viability of salmon and of course harvesting that salmon and continuing to see that way of life here in BC? What's your hope for the future?
Well, a lot of my hope would really draw from how incredibly invested so many communities and individuals and groups across the province and into the Yukon are when it comes to salmon. I mean, they're one of the most kind of powerful and enduring cultural symbols for so many British Columbians. And that is an enormous resource for us to draw on in terms of finding ways to be successful. And so that gives me hope, is just knowing how many people will be willing to really find a way to contribute to this. Whether that means governments or industry or community groups or First Nations, I mean, everybody has something to contribute to this. And so I think, the vision or the goal for this Pacific Salmon Strategy is to really create the opportunity for those groups to come together and contribute in an integrated way to address some of these threats that salmon face and develop a healthier future for salmon, where salmon are more abundant and able to support fisheries and play their role in an ecosystem for so many other species as well, up and down the coast. And I think that would be a great outcome for everyone, whether it's from the perspective of the department or the communities that rely on and get so much out of this resource.
Okay, Neil, thank you so much for your time today. Very much appreciated. Definitely not an easy decision that was made, but of course, as you mentioned, salmon are in crisis, and this had to be done. And we thank you for your insights. And I'm sure as time goes forward, we may speak again about some of these issues, because they're not going away anytime soon.
Well, that's for certain. And thanks for your questions, Dan.
That was Neil Davis, Acting Regional Director of Fisheries Management for the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. And we spoke with him in Vancouver. We'll be right back.